Good morning. I'd like to call the Nassau County Board of Supervisors meeting for January 26th to order. In a little bit, I'm going to invite you to stand and join us at the flag salute. Before I do that, I want you to know that following the flag salute, you're welcome to have a seat, and I'll come down to the lectern in front and give you a State of the County address. So please join me in the flag salute.
I pledge allegiance to the flag of the United States of America and to the Republic for which it stands, one nation, under God, indivisible, with liberty and justice for all.
Well, good morning. It's a privilege to have all of you here and to be able to speak to you and talk to you about the condition of our county here in January of 2010. On the screen behind me is a photo of a road in a very modest neighborhood of West Modesto, Marshall Avenue, one of many streets in the 23 county pockets in the city. This area was developed 40-plus years ago to standards that were less than required for housing developments in the city limits at the time, considerably less. And it's what we call a county pocket because it's bordered by development with higher standards. These pockets, to varying degrees, suffer from depressed valuation and a shortage of infrastructure and amenities, sewer, storm drains, curb gutters and sidewalks, and streetlights. Most of these challenges exist on Marshall Avenue, yet this particular community did something this year that may become a model for the entire county. They acted. Just last year, only one security light burned at night on this entire street of 34 properties. That light, paid for by one property owner, was about to go out. The owner, on a fixed income, simply couldn't afford to keep it on. But the neighborhood wouldn't accept this. A majority of the property owners on this block chose to partner with the county and tax themselves a little over $3 a month each and provide 5 street lights down the street. Now you'll notice there's 7 lights there. 2 of the property owners, after the 5 lights went in, contacted on their own the MID and they've added 7. So it multiplied. Even in these tough times, they found a way to make a significant improvement at minimal expense. In my mind, that's partnership. Those lights are now on. Instead of continuing to allow the circumstances of history and the poor choices of others to trap them, they marshaled the resources they had, partnered with others, and resolutely improved conditions for themselves. How does this apply to the county? The spirit of what the Marshall Avenue group did can influence all of us. Solutions are not easy, but if we work together, they can be found. I think that's the lesson that Marshall Avenue teaches us. Now, here in Stanislaus County, at the beginning of 2010, there is ample opportunity to focus on dismal conditions and despair that things can't get better. Property values have tanked, sales tax revenue has diminished, unemployment is high, and our cut of property tax from the state is far lower than most counties. The state is in desperate and deplorable condition, and it's worsening, not improving. In many of our county departments, the needs for services have increased, while our resources to meet those needs have decreased. Everywhere we look, there are significant risks. And we've seen so many things go bad in the last 2 years, it's starting to feel like everything will go bad all of the time. There just doesn't seem to be much light on our street right now. So like our friends over on Marshall did, I'd like us to step back, focus on what we have, what we're doing well, and what opportunities that we may have for improving things. There are some bright spots out there. Our first area of concern is safety of our community. Even though challenged by declining revenue, the law enforcement agencies in our county are working as closely together now as they ever have to pool resources for dispatch collaboration, improved interoperability, and to keep a maximum number of officers on patrol. Fire departments struggling from onerous legislative requirements and crippling funding source reductions are evaluating new models of operation that could result in collapsing multiple administrative training and purchasing systems into one, creating efficiencies that not previously realized. Hopefully 2010 will be a year that we see the establishment of a family justice center led by our district attorney. A dedicated group of public employees and private sector donors have been working hard to create a center that would provide services at one location for victims of domestic violence. Currently, in the middle of a debilitating crisis, a victim and their family must visit multiple and widespread agencies as they seek medical care, counseling, and the prosecution of the crime. This effort, modeled after established centers in other counties, would bring all of these services to one place and attempt to ease the suffering that the crime has caused. We are grateful to the families who have stepped forward with significant and long-term financial commitments to make this happen. Building new roads and maintaining old ones is very expensive. We must work with our city partners to make progress in this area. The county continues to provide a leadership role through the Stanislaus Council of Governments and its participation with the 8-county San Joaquin Valley Regional Planning Agency's Policy Council. Work is continuing on creating a new non-stop east-west road across our county. There are few better examples of regional collaboration than the North County Corridor by Oakdale, Riverbank, Modesto, Stanislaus County, Stancog, and Caltrans. Accomplishing something now that should have been demanded by the citizens of this county 30 years ago will positively impact future citizens for generations to come. Recently, the Department of Finance estimated that California's population grew by more than 400,000 people last year, and it will continue to do so. Home prices have fallen significantly here in the Central Valley, but the Bay Area counties' home values have stayed much closer to their 2007 highs, creating as much or more price disparity than there ever has been. When the economy turns, our region will once again be faced with population growth pressures. And while we've grappled with the challenges of growth for several decades, we don't have a plan that will guide us to successful preparation for the new growth in our cities. This current board has set aside funding to craft such a plan, and with a renewed commitment to create something that is useful and inclusive of each city's goals, the supervisors and the 9 mayors will work diligently on a growth management plan for Stanislaus County this year. Foremost among those things that will help to overcome the unemployment and low household income realities of our county will be job creation. Stanislaus County must do something that will distinguish it from all the other Valley counties that are battling the same challenges that we face. Maybe more than anything we've attempted in the past, the opportunity at Crow's Landing to partner with the Port of Oakland and the Union Pacific Railroad offers that distinction. 2010 will be a watershed year for the development of this potentially huge job generator, and in the process increase the probability that all the business parks in our county will experience improved results. Stanislaus County's economic engine is and will be agriculture. We emphatically want this to continue. This county is a leader in forging forward in the fight against misplaced restrictions and inappropriately managed population growth that has crippled or killed agricultural communities in the past. No other Valley County is requiring acre-for-acre ag land set aside for housing developed in its boundaries. No other Valley County has an agricultural recycling ordinance that protects processors and residents by defining and monitoring safe reuse of its food byproducts. Stanislaus County will continue to be a partner with our agricultural industry and community. One of the greatest benefits of regional cooperation is just emerging on our doorstep. For years, Westside agriculture has suffered from inconsistent water supplies and shortages. Taking a page from the playbooks of coastal agricultural counties, the cities of Modesto, Turlock, and Ceres are working hard on a joint agency agreement with the Del Puerto Water District that will maximize the efficiencies of very expensive tertiary sewage treatment facilities. The reliable source of high-quality water could be the very thing that water districts on the west side of our county have been seeking for a long time. In Monterey County, 12,000 acres of highly productive vegetable growing land was saved from saltwater intrusion by just such a system. Should these cities in Del Puerto succeed, what they've accomplished could be a proven template of success for the rest of our cities to model. Currently, there is tremendous interest in this project in Washington, D.C., and is being evaluated for significant federal funding. Healthcare is a huge concern across our county and our country. And it's Congress and the administration fuss and debate. Actually giving care where our people need it falls largely to the county. Our clinic system provides health care to more than 70,000 people annually during more than 200,000 office visits. We have significant concerns on how new legislation will impact our ability to provide that care. A potential bright spot in our health services system results from a very dark and frustrating set of decisions made recently by federal regulators. For more than 30 years, Stanislaus County has trained family practice doctors in its 3-year residency program, and these doctors in training and the doctors teaching them have been the heart and soul of our clinic system, providing the only health care that the 70,000 have. Inexplicably, last year, Health and Human Services decided to stop funding the residency program, decertify the program, and demanded that nearly $20 million of funding be immediately returned to them. The decision has been appealed, and we will fight to reverse it, but we're ready if our efforts prove inadequate to do that. To prevent a total collapse of the county's health care safety net, a new coalition has been formed and tentatively approved that would broaden the number of hospitals participating and could result in more doctors being trained each year in multiple specialties. We are very hopeful that the outcome will be a stronger, more broadly based and diverse residency program that ultimately provides better health care services for those that need them so badly. Recently, there's been a lot of media coverage regarding pensions and retirement pay. Certainly, there are policies that need to be altered and practices that need to change for the long-term health and integrity of the county's retirement system. And I ask you not to lose sight of the fact that the vast majority of Stanislaus County's employees and retirees are and were hardworking, honest, diligent members of our community who will spend their retirement years living on modest pensions after long dedicated years in career, in public service. We thank all of you who care about doing things right and work hard doing so. Alexander Graham Bell once said, "When one door closes, another door opens." We often look so long and so regretfully upon the closed door that we do not see the ones that open for us. 2010 will be a difficult year, but not a year without hope and opportunity. We'll all need to make do with less, better use what we have, and look to share what we have with others to make us all stronger. It won't be easy. All will have to sacrifice, and we may not see improvement in the overall economy for some time. But as a partner, I can assure you that we'll keep the lights on. Thank you. We have a couple of presentations this morning, the first being an employee service award for 35 years of service in our library department. Michelle Peck.
Morning, Chairman Grover, board members, staff, members of the public. I'm Vanessa Zopek, your county librarian. We're here to honor Sharon Arpoika. Sharon Arpoika has used her considerable talent serving library customers for more than 35 years. Her abilities range from recommending books for customers to supervision, and from division head to storyteller extraordinaire. She's our grand dame of teen and children's librarianship. Sharon was hired in 1974 as an administrative clerk for the Riverbank Library. Cream rises to the top. She was soon promoted to library assistant, and when the library moved to its new location, she managed that branch until 1993. From Riverbank, Sharon transferred to the circulation department in Modesto and served as the clerical division supervisor. During that time, she enrolled in library school at San Jose State University. She received her master's in library science in 1999. After a brief time as a reference librarian, Sharon realized her true passion was working with children and transferred to the Modesto Library's Teen and Children's Department. She was interim supervisor of that department in 2001 and was promoted to Division Head Librarian 3 for Teen and Children's Services in 2002, where she continues today. She's a valuable part of the library system's senior leadership team. Positive and optimistic, a true believer in the efficacy and the power of reading, Sharon is dedicated to bettering our community. She's a founding member of the Stanislaw chapters of the National Organization of Women and of Friends Outside. She's past president of Oakdale Riverbank Escalon chapter of the American Association of University Women. She assisted in the establishment of the Rape Crisis Center here in our area. In 1981, she received the Women Helping Women Award from the Oakdale Soroptimus. In 1982, she was the recipient of the Stanislaw County Commission for Women's Outstanding Woman Award for her work in helping to elevate the status of women in our county. She's retiring at the end of this month, just a couple more days, and in her retirement, Sharon is looking forward to spending more time singing in her church choir and perhaps joining the singing seniors in Oakdale. Her strong belief in community service may lead her to become active with the Stanislaw County Literacy Center and other community organizations. She plans to continue her involvement in her son's and grandson's athletic activities, and she also hopes to have more time for her garden, for traveling, and of course, for reading. We thank Sharon for the service that she has given to our county and to the library. We appreciate the many years that she has provided inspiration and guidance to children by sharing the joy of reading with them and by fostering lifelong readers. We librarians recognize her vision and advocacy are a legacy to teen and children's services in our profession. It's a rich legacy which will live for years to come through the countless lives that she has touched. To learn from her and to work with her has been a privilege and an honor. Sharon R. Poika.
Hello, Sharon.
Hi.
It sounds like you've had a wonderful career. And on behalf of this board and this county, I want to thank you for the many really good things that you accomplished for us at the library. It struck me as I was listening, what's the biggest difference that you noticed about the library between when you started and where it's at now?
Well, I think technology. In fact, I have a little story that I was going to tell about, I think I was born to be a librarian. A few months ago, we were cleaning out my mom's house and going through the books, and there was a book there that I had received as a very young child. And when I opened it up, inside was a little, you remember those of you a long time ago when you checked out a book, there was a pocket in the book and there was a card that you wrote your name on? Well, I had decided to start my own lending library as a child. And I had taken all of my books and I made little pockets for them and little cards for them. And there it was. I thought, oh my goodness, I was destined to do this work. And, of course, when I started at Riverbank, you know, that's how people still check books out. They wrote their names on the cards. So technology has been a big thing. And, of course, you know, keeping the library funded at a level to make it a sustainable institution has been a real challenge, but something that is so vital, and so that I've been, you know, privileged to continue to work to have a strong library. Even with technology, we still need libraries.
Let me ask you a question. As a lifelong librarian and somebody that actually was operating a library before she was a librarian. What are the chances that you're going to have an Amazon Kindle?
You know, I really like coming up with that book. Although people tell me the e-books are really, you know, portable and easy to, you know, take with you and that kind of thing. So I don't know. I'm still, I haven't even gotten a smartphone yet. But as long as I, you know, what I really like, though, are the audio books, because I do have trouble with my vision, and so reading for a sustained period is difficult for me. So I really like the audio books. So I'm more likely to have a good set of earphones or something that I can plug in.
Good. Well, once again, this signifies our appreciation, but in no way is adequate for this plaque here. So I'd like to present that to you. And thank you very much for everything you did for us.
Thank you.
Okay, then we will consider a proposal to appoint Family Services Specialist Recognition Week here in Stanislaus County. And to do that is our department head, Christine Applegate.
Good morning.
Good morning.
We're here today to recognize the county staff who are our human connection to the community for individuals and families who are seeking safety net services. And those are the people that help with food, shelter, medical care, and helping to find employment. We have the honor of talking about these people today. They are the largest classification in the county. There are more family service specialists than any other county classification, and they serve in four different county departments. Is that there? I'm not seeing it. Okay. With the unemployment, as mentioned, being very high in our county, these are people in our county service that do a lot of work with families who have needs. They serve in four different departments, and in the Alliance WorkNet, we have Family Service Specialist 3 who provide individualized career counseling, job search, and vocational training, and they have a successful employment rate of 89%, even in this economy. They offer work readiness, job search, and placement assistance for our StanWorks customers and also operate the paid work experience program. Alliance WorkNet also works with youth at risk youth ages 17 to 21. For the past 3.5 years, they've worked with law enforcement, and they target educational and employment opportunities for youth involved in gangs or at risk of being involved with gangs. At Behavioral Health and Recovery Services, there are family service specialists who identify insurance and funding for any uninsured clients that come in, either in outpatient programs or those hospitalized. They also help with Medi-Cal and SSI applications. At the Health Services Agency, there are 10 FSSs, oh, that's our shorthand for it, Family Service Specialists is an FSS, at the main scenic drive location, and they're responsible for determining eligibility for the Medically Indigent Adult Program. Last year, they served over 8,000 customers, and they anticipate serving over 10,000 in 2010. At the Community Services Agency, we have over 350 Family Service Specialists, and they work in our programs to help families access services. We've had quite an increase over the last few years because of the economy, and they work in the area of CalWORKs, where they've seen an 8% increase in applications, in the areas of Medi-Cal eligibility, where there's been a 40% increase in applications, and in food stamps, where we've had a 51% increase in applications. At this point in time, 27% of all county residents receive some sort of public assistance. So we'll continue with the slides and share a little more about the impact. In the Community Services Agency, over 143,000 residents rely on the safety net programs administered by our family service specialists. The total economic value of these benefits in 2008-09 was $307 million, and this year that has risen to $311 million. The residents served in these programs have increased over the past by 20% over the past 2 years. Also, the benefits, again, are for daily living expenses, access to food, shelter, health care, and opportunities to work. These support your board priorities of a safe community and a healthy community. In CSA, the family service specialists work in a number of our programs. In our StanWorks division, they work in CalWORKs, Welfare to Work, Food Stamps, Medi-Cal, Child Care, and Refugee Services. In our Adult Services Division, they work in our General Assistance Program, our Medi-Cal Long-Term Care and Aged, Blind, and Disabled Program. In the Child and Family Services Division, they help with the foster care. And in Financial Services and Operations, they do quality control and hearings and special investigations. So they're throughout all of our divisions in our programs. In the year 2008-2009, Family Service Specialists demonstrated their excellent case management abilities, and they provided food stamp payments to over 55,000 individuals while maintaining a 97.44 accuracy rate. And the state measures our accuracy rate, and ours has always been one of the highest in the state. Assisting over 2,147 customers obtain employment. We served over 531 children in foster care and issued $9 million in payments to foster care families. There's a large division of child care, and they work with providing child care payments to over 1,400 providers, which total over $8,929,018. They also have a very high payment accuracy rate of 96.92%, the highest in the state. In our food stamp program today, I just want to highlight that the numbers are higher than they were in 2008-2009, and there's been a 113% increase in the amount of benefits issued between July 2007 and 2009. The Family Services Specialists have quite a few achievements as well. Again, we're measured on accuracy, and they are able to do this in times of increasing caseloads. They are maintaining a 90% overall accuracy rating in the 2009 single audit, and 100% accuracy rating for informing families with affected children about the Healthy Families Program, which is a medical insurance program. Over 118,000 residents receive assistance through our Medi-Cal program. The family specialists also provide savings to Stanislaus County through working in the SSI advocacy program to help customers who are on general assistance get onto SSI, which is, as you know, a permanent disability program. And they generate around 389,640 something in recoupment of GA payments. And then fraud investigations led to a total savings in cash and food stamp payments of over of $1.8 million last year, which came out to be about 1.1% of the total benefits issued. The family service specialists are also within our special investigations unit, and there's a good relationship between the family service specialists and the investigators because the referrals to the investigators come from the family service specialists who have a concern or have something that red flags something going, maybe something here isn't right, and they pass along a referral to the special investigations unit who are able to go out then and investigate and look for any fraud. The family service specialists are very committed to our customers and have a very high rate of satisfaction. 91% of our customers stated that they were well treated. 89% of the customers said that they received the help that made a positive difference in their life. And 92% of our customers stated that overall the agency has been helpful to me. What I'd like to do right now briefly is just ask all the family services specialists in the audience to stand up and be recognized. Oh, I know you're here. And we'd like to recognize also the officers and members of our local chapter of New Paths. New Paths is a nationwide eligibility professional organization that supports staff working in the human services field. And we'd like to thank them for their commitment to professional growth and stewardship. And at this point, I'd like to ask you to proclaim this week, the week of January 24th, as Family Services Specialist Recognition Week, and also to present the resolution to Lori Gray, who's here as the acting president of our New Paths chapter.
Hi, Lori. Well, we have here a board resolution proclaiming exactly that, Family Services Specialist Recognition Week. And most of the details, but not all the details that Ms. Applegate just went over are listed here. The number actually is 389-646 without the 8. But we really appreciate all the work that you do and the care and concern you bring to the many people that you serve every day. Do you have anything you'd care to add?
Well, as acting president of the National Eligibility Workers Professionals Associated through Human Services, I humbly accept this proclamation.
Thank you very much. We have opportunity now for public comment, and this would be an opportunity for anyone that cares to address the board on an item that's not on the agenda. Please come forward, state your name for the record, and we'll give you a couple of minutes to let us know what you want to tell us. Seeing no one, then we'll move to the consent calendar. For those of you that aren't here often, it's all the items that have the asterisk will be enacted at one time. Anybody care to pull anything from the consent calendar? If not, we'll entertain a motion for approval.
Motion to approve.
Second.
Motion Supervisor O'Brien, second Supervisor DeMartini. All in favor say aye.
Aye.
Any opposed? Motion carries 5-0. Thank you. The next item we'll hear then is item B7. It's an approval to accept the final design for the design build construction of the new animal services facility. Ms. Hill Thomas.
Good morning, Mr. Chairman, members of the board, Mr. Robinson, Mr. Doring. Thank you, Mr. Chairman, for reminding us of opportunities even in these days.
Sure.
We do believe this project presents a unique opportunity to partner and improve service in our community. I'd also like to thank all of the project team members, many of whom are here today, our city partners, the new partner on the block, our DD Design Build Construction team. We have worked hard and together to bring these recommendations to you today. And a special thank you to the board's Capital Facilities Committee, comprised of Chairman Grover and Supervisor Monteith, for your work, continuing work on capital projects. It is our pleasure to bring to you the final design recommendations of the new animal services facility. Behind me, I think now, is Eric Wohl. He's the architect of record who came in as a part of the design build process from LDA and is a critical member of the DD design team that will take this to the finish line for us. The next slide is one you've seen many times over the last couple of years. It's our checklist of what's been done. I won't review it. I think you're very familiar with it. I'm pleased to see so many things checked off, and there are a few things left to do. Since we were last in this boardroom on October 27, 2009, we have indeed secured the final agreements with our partner cities, and I'd like to recognize the efforts of our Chief Executive Officer, Mr. Rick Robinson, in that effort, and our five good, strong partners. Those agreements are in place. In addition to that, you authorized an agreement with the City of Modesto regarding the old Finch Road site and new animal shelter costs. That agreement has been fully executed. You authorized an agreement for a low-income, low-cost spay-neuter program. That agreement has been executed. And you selected the contractor to actually complete the design and build the construction. And I think one of the most important recommendations is you adopted a revised and decreased project budget down over $2.2 million from the original project budget for the delivery of this new facility and program. Today, we are here to tell you we're ready to proceed. We are well within the reduced budget and intend to stay there. We are going to review with you the final design decisions, our recommendations for the equipment purchase, and our plan to proceed to implement this whole effort. Again, these recommendations have been reviewed and accepted by your board's Capital Facilities Committee, and we appreciate their time and attention, as well as that of all of the board members who have a high level of interest in this effort. Okay. What you'll hear a little bit about today, Tim Fedorchek is with me this morning. We're going to review this, and then Eric is available to answer any questions you may have. Is really about what the final materials are, what the layout selections are, what the building systems are, and what the cages and equipment will be. We're not going to go into a lot of detail, and essentially the whole facility plan, for the most part, remains unchanged. It's still the same size. The interior has been simplified, and we believe as a team that we've benefited from having the contractor at the table because we've been able to produce a number of improvements at actually a reduced cost, and we're pleased with that. All of the additions we're recommending, or the final design, are all recommended within funds set aside for the final design and in the design and construction contingency fund, so we think we're well positioned financially to deliver the project. With that, Tim is going to, I think, review with you the interior plan changes that we recommend.
Good morning, Mr. Chairman and members of the board. The plan that you see on the screen behind you is pretty much the same consistent plan, or very similar consistent plan, with what we've shown you for the past many months, from the initial conceptual designing process, but now with the refinements and additions and fine-tuning in the materials, in the systems, that our contractor, DD Construction, through their architect, LDA Architects and Eric Wall, have provided to us. And this shows you just the general layout as, that we've had. Again, just reviewing very briefly, the adoptable animal holding area is in here. This is an area where the majority of animals being held that are prepared for adoption or available for adoption would be kept. We have storage of supplies, followed by general animal holding. Those may be surrendered animals or animals that have yet to be screened. Animal intake facility, the county veterinarian services to treat those animals that have come into the intake process and to assist in preparing animals for adoption. The low-cost, low-income, low-cost spay and neuter clinic is in the center for, front portion of the building. And, of course, the main public entrance and animal services administration area is located right off the front door. So we really have two main front entrances. One, the public entrance, the majority of public who would come to visit animals and look at animals, to meet with them, to have the opportunity for adoption would come in. The other entrance being for the low-cost, low-income spay and neuter clinic. There's a smaller third entrance for animal surrender space. Central to this, I just also wanted to point out that that there's an interactive corridor, and one of the innovative things about this design is that public that are interested in looking at animals that may be available for adoption will be able to come into the space. We're really intending to make this a space that is a welcoming environment, a space that brings potential pets and potential new owners together to be able to play with, interact with those animals. We think that's a great opportunity, and we're really hoping to make that a nice space that really welcomes that kind of activity. One of the major features of the final design is the addition of, or I should say the going back to adding of sound containment walls and sound containment materials. We did an extensive look at the acoustics that are anticipated within the design of the facility, and you'll see on the screen highlighted behind you, or in front of you, depending on where you're sitting, the in yellow are the location of some sound containment walls. This was originally proposed by the in the conceptual design and programmatic stage of the project because we understand that animals, particularly dogs, have a rolling barking effect. One dog will start barking, the next dog in the next cage will begin to bark because the first one barks, and that continues on and on. And at the recommendation of an acoustician, and in working with LDA and DD Construction, we were able to find a way to come back and reinstall these walls back into the project to be able to reduce the overall sound effect, not only the carrying effect of the sound, but also the addition of sound absorption materials within the space. And through quite a bit of research, we're able to identify with LDA the material called Tectum, which will be applied to various surfaces within the holding areas and throughout strategic locations within the facility to really reduce the level of noise within the facility to a more hospitable level. It was an amazing, I have to look at Eric, it was an amazing discovery, I think, sitting in the project team meeting when we found the acoustician said that without these materials we could expect up to 110 decibels within the animal holding areas, which is about the equivalent of standing next to an aircraft that's landing on a runway. And to work in that day in and day out and to have that welcoming experience for the public, we wanted to bring that down as much as we possibly could. We think this will have an enormous difference. And one of the key features of this addition has also been that by reducing that sound level now, we're able to do it going into construction as opposed to having to retrofit that type of material and sound walls into the design, which so many other shelters we've discovered have had to do after the fact. So we think that this is a proactive move to substantially enhance the design of a facility.
An important component of this facility operating efficiently and effectively will be the cage and kennel equipment. You authorized us to issue requests for qualifications and proposals. We did that the day after your last board consideration. We received 8 really great proposals. It's a very competitive market right now from across the country. The criteria is focused on strength and durability, the gates and latching systems, privacy panels, that's to reduce the barking so the animals can't always all see each other. We looked very closely in the cage and equipment evaluation and noise control. The cost was critically important. The separation, it's called a guillotine door on this slide, but the separation of the cages, actually I'll stop here for a moment and tell you that what we learned and in the equipment we're recommending is that there's a full separation in each of the cages that we recommend to be purchased, which could essentially double the capacity of the animal shelter if there were a major emergency or we had to hold a lot more animals than we envisioned, because that separation is tended to allow the animal to be on one side while another side is cleaned. But in this case, we think it gives us some perhaps backup capacity that we hadn't originally envisioned. The aesthetics were important in the regard to the public areas where they'll be, that the public can see the animals and understand and see them in an environment that is pleasing, but also still focused on the control and spread of disease. It was a very robust effort. I'd like to thank Gino Colaccia, Don Feemister, Dr. Stuart Kwan, Annette Patton, and our animal advisory member, Augusta Farley from the west side of the county, who spent a lot of time and attention focusing on this recommendation. Our budget, we're right on budget. There were $649,000 for the cages and installation. The cage installation is estimated to cost less than $100,000. Our team recommends that we execute the purchase order with the top-ranked company, that was Shoreline, issue a purchase order for $554,797, and authorize the project manager to make any changes consistent with the existing construction contingency change order policy of your board, should those changes be necessary, so long as they are within the equipment budget only. Dr. Stewart is well on his way of completing the veterinary clinic equipment purchase planning. In fact, I think he's nearly done. Those equipment purchases are all well within the approved budget for veterinarian equipment as well. We have some pictures here, very similar to what we installed in our facility. The animal cages on my right, so your left, are for the dogs, and the cat tea kennels are component pieces where cows can be housed. We very much focused, and this team did, on being sure that these were cleanable and the equipment would promote disease control, not encourage disease control. Those were important components of this evaluation. The last piece of our recommendation is regarding the exterior facade. It was important all along that we deliver this project within budget, and it's no less important today. But we also thought it was important to look at the visibility of the new animal services facility to distinguish it for the public's effect of, from the surrounding structures in a way that's complementary, to provide clear and public entrances, which was a concern of your board early on in the design of this project, for both the main public entrance and the low-income, low-cost spay and neuter program. And what we're recommending today, we characterize as a modest improvement that we believe will welcome the public and adopt animals. And the young architect behind me has drawn this 21 different ways formally, and we appreciate his creativity and his determination to please us at a minimal increased cost. The recommended cost today is $65,000, and it is well within the funds set aside in the budget. This is a picture of the block building as designed and as we bid it to our pre-qualified general contractors. This was the proposal, and this proposal is one that I'm not sure that we brought formally to the board, but that, and let me back up. In the competition for the design selection, most of the competing design build firms brought forward an improved facade or a front elevation of a building. We saw this, we loved it as a project team, and then regrettably dismissed it because we couldn't afford it. The price tag on this was an additional $390,000. And it brought us at least the idea that some distinction to encourage the visibility of the public to the entrances would be really important. So the next slide shows you what we are recommending today. And this is a recommendation that provides visibility for both of the entrances. The entrance on my far right is the public entrance, the main lobby, where residents will come in and go all the way through back to the adoption center and that interactive corridor. The other entrance that Tim's pointing out now is that to the low-income, low-cost spay-neuter. One element here that's really important are what are called the eyebrows over the windows. Through the work of the designer with our team, these added elements are really important because this facility is wholly facing the west, and there will be provide some shade and we think some energy efficiency from the addition of those eyebrows over the windows. The last door all the way down on my left is the owner surrender area. We think what's important about this elevation, and we actually have it in two variations of color, if we can show the other. We're not quite to final color selection yet, but the idea of the introduction of that bright red to bring some level of visibility to the entrance really accomplishes what our objective was. It's still a modest concrete block building, but we think the addition of these changes will make it clear where to come to adopt animals in Stanislaus County. With that, I'd like to review briefly the budget for the final design. Your board and our partners had already approved setting aside $881,684. You specifically set aside money for noise and disease control. We specifically set aside money for proposed design improvements of the contractor for additional fence and, of course, a design and construction contingency. Our recommendations today are well within those funding sources previously set aside. The barking walls and sound reduction at $147,699. I'm not going to read all the numbers. The sound material improvements, the corridor, main interactive corridor noise reduction improvements, lighting and windows, and the exterior facade all add up to $434,127. That will leave a remaining contingency of nearly 9% for the construction cost. The project schedule is before you today. We are already talking about picking the day next December, or this coming December, for the dedication and grand opening of the new animal services facility. Mr. Chairman and members of the board, we have before you today five recommendations. They are to accept the final design, to authorize the project manager to implement the changes in the construction contract for the change order, all outlined in the report consistent with the board's change order policy, to authorize the execution of the agreement with Shoreline for the equipment and cage purchase in a lump sum not to exceed $554,797, to authorize the change orders to that only within the approved budget for final equipment should there be a part or a piece that was not previously identified, and finally, to direct the auditor controller to approve the budget transfers to implement these recommendations. Many members of our team are present today, and we would all be happy to answer any questions you may have.
Thank you. Are there any questions of staff for the board? Anyone from the audience care to comment? Okay, then we have five recommendations from staff that I'll entertain a motion for.
So moved.
We have a motion for approval of all five. Is there a second?
Second.
We Second. Motion by Supervisor Montieth, second by Supervisor Kayser. All in favor, say aye.
Aye.
Aye. Any opposed? Thank you.
Thank
you. Motion's approved. We'll then go to item 7, correspondence.
My mic working, sorry.
There we go.
This board has received a letter from the California High Speed Rail Authority regarding public scoping meetings as part of the environmental review process for the Merced to Sacramento section of the high speed train project.
Please refer this to the Department of Public Works and the San Joaquin Valley Rail Committee.
This board has received a copy of the Fire Life Safety Inspection Report for the Stanislaus County Juvenile Hall at 2215 Blue Gum Avenue in Modesto from the City of Modesto Fire Department.
Refer to the Department of Environmental Resources.
And this board has received the claims as noted on the agenda.
We acknowledge receipt of the claims and we refer them to the Chief Executive Office Risk Management Division. Under item 8, are there any Board of Supervisor reports? No? Okay. We'll ask for a legislative, fiscal, and management report from the Chief Executive Officer.
Yes, thank you. I would like to start with a piece of very good news. We did learn just yesterday that the ACGME Residency Review Committee awarded a 3-year initial accreditation to our new residency consortium with only one corrective action required. So consistent with your State of the County address, we are moving forward with this project. I want to particularly thank Dr. Peter Broderick and his outstanding work, Marianne Lee, Patty Hill Thomas, for spearheading the creation of the consortium, and all those persons who worked so diligently in Washington, D.C. to work through all the hurdles relating to the accreditation of the consortium, particularly Congressman Dennis Cardoza and George Radanovich. Additionally, I would like to note that if you have been following the news, most of us have, the jail doors did swing open yesterday. That meant that in Stanislaus County, we'll see the release of 71 inmates released from custody and an additional 111 from the Alternative Work Program. The new program introduced by the state is intended to provide release opportunities to low-risk offenders who complete certain vocational and rehabilitative training. We have significant concerns about the adverse impacts in our community of this new policy, and we also understand there will be some difficulty in tracking the release of the inmates and ultimately the disposition of those inmates into our community. But we'll keep you posted as we move along. As you would have read on today's agenda, the city and county are jointly kicking off the census today at 11 a.m. The original location was a plaza that has been moved to Center Plaza in the Stanislaus River Room. Our board chair, Grover, will be, I think, assisting in the kickoff of that meeting. There'll be special training for Max and special district representatives presented by representative of the U.S. Census Bureau and the National Association of Latino Elected and Appointed Officials at the upcoming Stanislaus County Community Retreat on February 10th at 5:30 and 6:45. We are continuing to support this important effort for our community and anticipate that it can bring some very positive outcomes to Stanislaus County and our nine cities.
Thank you, Mr. Robinson. This meeting is adjourned.